Hey, this is Stu Hynek, author of How to Grow Your Business Like a Weed. And if you want to fire up your relationships, you should be listening to the Build Your Network podcast, brought to you by Guestio.com.
Yo, what's up, everybody? Welcome to the Build Your Network podcast, the only top-rated show committed to helping you grow your business, foster real relationships, increase your authority, and build the network of your dreams. Let's get into the show. Hey, what's going on, everybody? Welcome back to Build Your Network. I am your host, Travis Chappell. Today, I am sitting down with Stu Hynek. Stu is a best-selling business author, marketer, and a Wall Street Journal cartoonist. His first book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, was named one of the top 64 sales books of all time. And now his latest, How to Grow Your Business Like a Weed, lays out a complete model for explosive business growth based on the strategies, attributes, and tools weeds use to grow, expand, dominate, and defend their turf. A twice nominated Hall of Fame marketer and NASDAQ Entrepreneurial Center author in residence, he was named the Father of Contact Marketing by the AMA, and he lives on a beautiful island in Washington State. Guys, it's going to be such a fun interview. There's so many things we could talk about. Fun fact, when I first was starting my show, I was looking for as many books as I could get on networking. Stu's was one of the ones that made it into my top five list of the ones that I recommend to people for learning how to connect with people in a unique and interesting way. So Stu, welcome to the show, man. Thanks for coming on. It's been a long time coming.
Thank you so much, Travis. What a great introduction. I didn't know about the top five. That was cool.
Yes, sir. Yep. We put together a top five networking books list for our audience, I don't know, like 2-3 years ago. And How to Get a Meeting with Anyone was on there, as well as Give and Take by Adam Grant, Dig Your Well Before You're Thirsty, and a couple other ones. So
Company.
Good company, man. Yep, yeah. Exactly. So before we get into some practical stuff, I love to spend a little bit of time building some context and talking about your story, how you got to where you are, because I often find, especially in unconventional career paths, that it usually wasn't something that you thought about doing when you were 14 or 15, and there's probably a series of obstacles or events that led you to where you were. So let's go ahead and rewind the clock. Take me back to 14, 15-year-old Stu. Set the scene for me. Tell me about what it was like growing up being you, and then we'll get into some more practical questions.
I had a blast growing up. I grew up in Massachusetts, a little town called Sudbury, Massachusetts. And God, it was just, it was an incredible place to grow up. Lots of woods and ponds to explore. The ponds had snapping turtles. And so there was intrigue. And it was a great place to grow up. But I was also, this is really where my interest in cartooning came from, is when I was, I don't know, 10 or so, my brothers and I were sneaking Playboys out of my father's dresser doors. And so of course we read the articles, but then...
It was mainly just because, the writers were so good. The journalists were amazing. Yeah, I mean,
that's why you open the pages of Playboy.
Of course, yeah. So enough said.
But I saw the cartoons. I'm just saying, who are these guys? These guys are amazing. How do they do this? That sparked my interest in cartooning. And later, those same cartoonists became part of my group, part of my marketing group. That was really cool. So I got to work with my heroes.
You kind of really leaned into the artist side of your brain at that point.
Well, partly, but then I have a marketing degree. So I went to USC and studied marketing, and I started combining them. I think that's kind of, it's an interesting part of this, that you get to layer these things and come up with really unique combinations.
So skill stacking.
Yeah. 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 That skill stacking gives you this unfair advantage. Who else is going to match that?
Right.
There weren't many people who were cartoonists or, following or toiling in cartooning as well as marketing. So that was a big, big advantage.
That's kind of the interesting thing about finding a blue ocean or operating in a niche or small opportunity or small space, is that even if you're a generalist in terms of your skill set, right, you take something like marketing, but you add another skill set on top of that, it puts you in a more unique company. And then you add a third skill set on top of that, it puts you in more unique company. And then it's like, well, we do these four things at like vertical integration, but because I have experience doing this thing and this thing, that makes me a more well-rounded, a better marketer, and helps me be able to attack the thing that I'm doing in a better way, which really ultimately led to your first book anyway. And the strategies that you were implementing were a combination of using your marketing mind as well as the skill that you acquired of cartooning.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I left college and I wanted to create direct mail campaigns I don't know what it sounds like today, but then it was really exciting. And personalization was just coming into the fore. And so
When did you graduate college? Sorry to interrupt. When did you graduate college?
77.
When you were getting your marketing degree at that point, were they teaching a lot of tactics in terms of a certain mode of marketing, like direct mail or television or anything like that? Or was it more strategic?
No. It was quite general.
What led into direct mail then?
Because I knew I could do something with cartoons. So I wanted to work with all the big magazine publishers, and they would pay a lot of money. If you were a top creative for them, they'd pay you a lot of money just to write a letter. Actually, I mean, it was really to create a campaign, but there was good money in it. It was great prestige. I was working. My first two assignments were for Rolling Stone and Bon Appetit. And, you know, I thrust ahead, even though David Ogilvy was saying, don't use humor, it doesn't work. And all the pundits were then following that. But I just thought, you know what? Cartoons are the best read and remembered parts of magazines and newspapers. Of course, people are going to pay attention to these, especially if the cartoon is about them. And I was right. And so the first two tests actually set new records for Rolling Stone and Bon Appetit. So that led me to where I ended up writing my first book. Because I thought, okay, this is my chance to break into the rest of the publishing industry. I need to reach about 24 people. They're VPs of consumer marketing or circulation at these big Manhattan-based print media companies like Time Inc. and Times Warner and Condé Nast and so on, Wall Street Journal, Forbes, et cetera. I knew it was going to be difficult to reach these people, but okay, go do it. I mean, that's kind of the fun of it, isn't it? They're hard to reach. So I put together a little campaign. I didn't know what to call it, called it a contact campaign. It consisted of an 8x10 print of a cartoon about each recipient and a note saying, this is the device I just used to beat the controls for Rolling Stone and Bon Appetit. I think we should put this to the test for your titles. And that campaign, Travis, all of them connected with me. All of them agreed to meet. So I went out to New York to meet them. All of them became clients.
So you're doing all of this independent.
Yeah.
Correct. As just like a kind of like a contractor, like kind of a pay
just per a freelancer.
Yeah.
And so if you think about that, that was 100% response rate, 100% meeting rate, and 100% conversion rate.
Wow.
From a campaign I spent about $100 on that went to 24 people.
Wow.
That was my first taste of what I ended up calling contact marketing in how to get a meeting with anyone. But that eventually led to writing that book, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone. That was a blast. People shared the most amazing stories of how they've broken through. God, people have been doing just crazy things to break through crazy smart things to do.
I'd love to hear a few examples of those on the show just because, somebody might be listening and be like, well, that's cool, but I'm not a cartoonist and I can't capture attention. That doesn't work for my niche. That doesn't break down some of those limiting beliefs if you can.
I mean, yeah, you don't have to be a cartoonist. What I'm doing when I'm sending a cartoon, although we actually offer that as a service as an agency. So you don't have to be a cartoonist. We'll do it for you, but you don't have to involve cartoons. I'm using cartoons because it's part of me. I mean, that's part of my background. I have a lot of background now, a lot of test history behind it. It makes sense. But if you knit, let's say, then knit something. You know, you can send all kinds of really interesting things just based on what you do or how to some special talent or maybe a special interest that you share with the person you're reaching out to. But people have used really interesting things. Dan Waldschmidt uses a sword, costs him $1,000 every time he sends one. He's a turnaround specialist and he wants to reach CEOs of companies that are in trouble. And so he sends a sword, and like the beautiful sword in a beautiful wooden box with a handwritten note. And it says, business is war. I noticed you lost a battle recently. I just want to let you know, if you ever need a few extra hands in battle, we've got your back. And he's getting 100% response rate to that campaign.
Wow.
That's pretty amazing. So there are a bunch of them, and we could go in a lot of different directions in terms of stories, but maybe there's just one more that I'll share. There was a software salesman who was calling on I can't say the name of the company, but if you watched the movie Forrest Gump, you might remember the reference to a certain fruit company. I don't know, maybe not. Intense. But anyway, the salesman was calling on the engineering department at the fruit company, and they loved his solution, but they said, okay, next thing you got to do is talk to purchasing. So he turned around, reached out to purchasing, and they wouldn't talk to him at all. So he thought, okay, fine. I'll go right around you to the CEO. And the problem was, if you got the reference to the fruit company, the CEO was one of the most famous CEOs probably of our lifetimes. So he was not going to be easy to reach. And he found that out, sending letters, leaving messages, sending faxes. That was time to, when you could send faxes or should, emails, et cetera. He was just doing everything he could think of and nothing was working. So one day this box, this plywood box shows up at the front counter. It has air holes drilled into it. And there's a note, handwritten note again, attached to the box. And so it was delivered to the CEO, surprisingly. And the note said, you know, it recounted his story. I talked to your engineering. They love my solution. Purchasing won't talk to me. So I've been trying to reach you. I haven't been able to do it. So this is my final attempt. So if you would, open the box and you'll find a pigeon. And on the pigeon's leg is a little capsule. In the capsule is a little slip of paper. If you'll write the name of your favorite restaurant, a date and a time, put the slip of paper back in the capsule and release the pigeon, I'll meet you there. And he showed up.
And it worked.
It worked. And this guy got a $250,000 deal.
Wow. By sending so a live kinds
of really,
pigeon.
Those are kind of the wild ones. But there are all kinds of really smart things people have been doing to get meetings. And if you can't get meetings, you can't sell, of course. Getting meetings is kind of a building block of success in business.
Oh, yeah, sure. Sure, right. It's like, you know, the lagging indicator of success is how many meetings you can get, because that's a direct indication of how many sales you're going to get, which is
network is either going to build or it won't, based on whether you can connect with people.
Right. Okay, so to get a little bit back into your story, is this like the first thing that you're attempting after college? Is this contact marketing thing?
Well, I used it to build my. I started to say that I used that campaign to reach out to the circulation directors at the. Or actually VPs of circulation at the big print companies or print media companies, all of them became clients. And so it launched my first business, which was to create direct mail campaigns for publishers. That was worth millions of dollars. And it came from a campaign that cost me about $100.
When you were in your early 20s.
Yep. And so then, of course, now I have a new book out. And this new book sort of goes back a little bit in time. I was driving down the freeway, Santa Monica Freeway, and I noticed a dandelion growing out of a crack in the concrete median. And I just thought, wow. Well, that's something we see all the time, but
yeah.
And I do as well. But that one time, it just made this impression. I'm just thinking, look at that little dandelion growing out of the crack. It's, you know, it just landed there. And right. I mean, the seed landed there, but how did it get there? Well, we know how it got there. Dandelions have these seeds that float in the air and they probe every possible opportunity to take root anywhere, unlike, let's say, I don't know, pine trees oak trees. They drop their acorns and pine cones at their feet, essentially, and they don't spread at all. So that dandelion had an unfair advantage. And I thought that was really fascinating. It didn't look depressed. It didn't look like, well, gee, this sucks. I ended up in the middle of a freeway instead of at the beach, which is where I really wanted to be. And we would do that to ourselves, but it had no emotion. So all it did was run its process. It sure looked happy, actually. Even though I'm saying it had no emotion, it looked happy doing it. And I just thought, you know, I hope I can live up to that example when I just throughout my career. So when I was beginning my career, but I hope I can live up to that example. And that started, you know, wasn't a lifelong fascination, but from that point on throughout my life, a fascination with what the hell are weeds up to? And what is it that they're doing? Do they actually have a model, a unified model for growing like a weed? And if they do, is it something that we can apply to our businesses? And they do have one, and it is applicable. And in fact, just the experience of writing the book has changed the way I've been doing business. And I'm hearing from people now who are reading how to get a meeting with, sorry, how to grow your business like a weed. And they're saying, yeah, it's changing the way that they're doing business.
Yeah.
And they're also seeing weeds quite differently. They're looking at things. What are they up to? You know?
What are a few of those strategies that
well, I would say, apply? I mean, just sort of to summarize first, weeds always deal with what is. They're never clouded by feelings and emotions that get in our way. Those things don't happen. They have a process that's just programmed into their DNA and they run it. So they deal with what is. They never do anything without an unfair advantage. They've got lots of unfair advantages built into what they do and how they operate and how they grow and how the seeds spread and all that. Mm. And they never do anything alone. That's interesting. And that was one of the ones that was a revelation to me, because we're so focused on being self-reliant. I mean, that's how we're raised, how we're brought up, that just we have to become self-reliant. And if you're an entrepreneur, I think entrepreneurs are probably some of the most self-reliant people in the population.
Yeah. Biggest culprits. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but the problem is That's great. That's wonderful. And they wouldn't be there without that. But then they have to set that aside because they have to build a team. And they, without building a team and without building infrastructure and so forth, without delegating, without getting out of the way, they're going to prevent anything from scaling. So, but anyway, so weeds are natural collaborators and they just never do anything alone. And that was a great lesson for me just to look at that and say, wait a minute, how can I do that in my business? And my business is changing, fundamentally changing because of it. And then finally, they always focus on what makes them win. So that's what they do. They deal with what is. They never do anything without an unfair advantage. They never do anything alone, and they always focus on what makes them win. If we could, that's a perfect description of a successful entrepreneur, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, for sure, for sure. And since this is build your network, we talk a lot about relationships. Let's focus in on the never do anything alone thing. And I want to hear kind of like a couple of practical maybe strategies that you've implemented in your business or that you've heard other readers implementing in their business that allows them to take advantage of this principle.
Sure. Well, I mentioned about cartoons and that I use cartoons to help clients break through to their top accounts. So, mm-hmm. So we have a program called Big Boards. It's based on these 18 by 24 inch, quarter inch thick foam core boards that have a cartoon about the recipient. And then on the flip side is branding and then a message from the sender to the recipient explaining who they are, why they want to meet, and next steps. So those go out and they create this huge impression. Well, they're big. So they create this huge impression and it gets people on the phone and gets them engaging. So the thing is, you know, I've got all this test history because I've used cartoons in direct mail now so much that I know exactly how to use them in direct mail and in these other marketing campaigns. And these things are, I mean, one of our clients, one Fortune 250 client went from essentially a 0% contact rate with their prime accounts to a 70% contact rate, 50% meeting rate from these big boards. So that's great. And I'm a very self-reliant person and I was blind to it. So I've been doing a lot of the selling myself. I mean, it's just a small agency. So I've just been doing a lot of that myself. What I came to realize after I wrote the book and just realized, my God, I'm holding my business back. So what I really should be doing is teaming with all of these people. For example, all of the sales thought leaders that I interviewed for how to get a meeting with anyone, I've got great relationships with them and I'm not doing anything with them in terms of building business together. Why not? Mm. So that's caused the launch of a new campaign of sending big boards out and I've been reaching out to them now anyway, but I'm just now sending out big boards to all of the people that I interviewed for that first book, and all the sales thought leaders, because they have all kinds of clients that we could tap into together.
Yeah.
And I have a solution to help their clients break through. I'm sure that'll help them. I'm sure it'll help all of them. It'll be a win-win-win situation. So just by going from one-to-one leverage to, let's say, multi-channel leverage, I'm gaining access to new sales channels and new pools of clients that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And that fosters much faster growth than I could be doing on my own. So that's maybe one example.
Yeah, sure. Just opening the door for more collaborations and setting ego aside and understanding that not only is it like not shameful to bring on collaborations, but it is actually very profitable and a smart strategy all the way around to continue to do that.
Absolutely. The weeds, the weeds would approve, but that's one of the things that, one of the messages that came through so clearly as I studied their model, or just as it fleshed out as I was researching for the book. We really have to collaborate. Collaboration is everything, and I know you know that because that's kind of the whole thrust behind your business and your podcast.
Yeah, I'm curious, Stu, to talk about the books and what they've done in terms of opening doors for you. I assume, you know, obviously everything, all the other strategies that you implement also work. What have writing these last couple of books done that maybe makes it a little bit easier for you to get your foot in the door and get a meeting with somebody?
So How to Grow Your Business Like a Weed just launched June 1st. So for me at this point in time, it's all new. But the experience really, so let's say with How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, the experience was that they read it. You know, when you read it, your exposure to the material is more recent than mine, even though I wrote it.
So
what's really amazing is that I don't really have to explain a whole lot because they're coming to me already understanding the thoughts, the reasoning behind all the rationale behind what we're doing with contact marketing.
Yeah.
And so there's that. And then there's also, gosh, you know, this book really has had an incredible impact around the world. a lot of people have read the book and then come back and told me, well, I read the book and then I made $300,000 right away. I got new business right away. Another one said, I've got to tell you this story. And he told me about how he went from new hire to sales manager of a multinational $4.7 billion company in the span of a year because he read the book and used contact marketing. Wow. And I don't know if you know the company ReachDesk. It's a UK-based company. They're a competitor to Sendoso. They're a gifting platform for getting people. And the owner said, look, I read your book. That inspired me to start the company. So,
oh, no way. Wow.
There's all kinds. They just got a $48 million, I don't know, Series B round of funding.
Wow. What was the name of that one again?
It's called ReachDesk.
ReachDesk. Yeah. Nice.
They've had the huge impact. You mentioned to me that my book was one of your top five for growing networks. And I didn't even know about that. And a lot of things, it just shows up in the darndest places, actually. Yeah. It showed up on the bookshelf of, I can't remember what it was. Anyway,
sneaking in on the bookshelf. It was just like an item in the scene.
Out on the bookshelf.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. Nice.
So,
that's awesome.
So, you know, books are well, you know, I talk a lot about cultivating unfair advantages in weed strategy, in the how to grow your business like a weed book. And one, if you have a book out, that is definitely an unfair advantage, you know? People know what you stand for, they read your best thinking on the subject and they want more. That's just totally different from, I don't know, let's say trying to reach out on LinkedIn, and we know the people, we see the people who pitch right as soon as they connect on LinkedIn, which is not a very smart way of doing it. But that versus people already know your thinking, they already know what it is. Maybe what you've done is start, you might have created an entirely new category, which I have done contact marketing is, it's not that I invented it, but it became a category that was named. I named it and became then named the father of that category. So that's pretty cool. But if you create your own category, then you mentioned Blue Ocean earlier. That is a Blue Ocean strategy for sure.
No kidding. Yeah, no kidding. Stu, I mean, this has been a lot of fun for me. Like I said, I've wanted to get you on since I read the book. So I'm happy we're able to finally make it happen. If you're listening to this, watching this right now, How to Grow Your Business Like a Weed. You guys know, anytime we recommend a book on the show, we recommend you go pick it up right now before you forget it, as long as you can do it safely. So for you that are driving, don't do it right now. Wait till you stop for gas or something, okay? How to Grow Your Business Like a Weed. Be sure to go grab a copy of that. I have no doubt that it'll be full of different valuable lessons you can get. And go pick up Stu's last book as well, How to Get a Meeting with Anyone, especially if you're a listener of the show. There's maybe not many more books that are extremely relevant to the topics that we talk about here than that one. So Stu, thanks for taking the time, man. It's been a lot of fun, and I look forward to the next time we can connect.
What a great pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks for listening to this episode. That's it for today. As you all know, this show is completely free. Our only ask is that if you found anything valuable in this episode or in any of the episodes that you've listened to, then share it with somebody else and leave us a quick rating review in whatever platform you're listening to right now. It would be super, super helpful for us. So that's it for today, guys. Thanks so much for tuning in. Catch you next time.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.